It's time to start the show and talk about the sports we saw. Inside jokes and takes from Danger and Battaglia. Bills and the Sabres and the Amherst. Who gave a microphone to these jerks? Gene's a big timer, a social misfit. Clueless to the title of the biggest bus gang hits. Yeah. Chuck Muncie's goons have the last say, so thanks for your time, Mr. Mayo. Danger likes his cold ones and he likes his bears. But this is Rochester, cute princessa.
Normal kiss.
He's critical of Sean, he's critical of Al.
Of course he married Sandy, cause she's Italian.
Welcome to the sports bar, that's where you are. Welcome to the sports bar, that's where you are. Welcome to the sports bar, that's where you are. With Danger and Battaglia.
It hurts, man. It hurts. And you know the feeling. We've all had the feeling. As a sports fan, it's a roller coaster ride. There are ups, there are downs, and I'm going to have to live with that replay of that Hail Mary in my mind for the foreseeable future. It might be one of the greater Hail Marys of all time. Jaden Daniels had the ball for, what, over 12 seconds on that play before he launched it downfield? I mean, I can be mad. I should be more mad than I am, but I really, I have so many mixed emotions after my football Sunday yesterday, and we welcome you into the sports bar. It's Danger and Battaglia.
Danger, the hallmark of a bad loss was that we still would have been giving you the business had the game played out the original way, where you're handing it off to an offensive lineman.
They deserve to lose. No, they were not the better team. They deserve to lose that game.
You're trying to invoke the 1985 Bears? Is that what you're doing,
dude,
here?
It is some classic Chicago Bears Rex Grossman era type S that's going on with this team. Like, we are going to win games with defense and special teams, and the offense is not going to do anything because we don't have any protection. The offensive line is trash. I'm not worried about Caleb Williams this season. I think that we have our quarterback. But I am very worried about the decisions being made by the coaches, and I don't have an answer for the offensive line. They did not show up last night for the Bears. But here's why I have mixed emotions. I mean, normally, and I know there's some people that are like, oh, Danger's going to go off today because of how his team lost and the Hail Mary and the way that game went. And you can give me the business, and that's fine. But you know what? The reason why I have mixed emotions is I was watching the game with my daughters and with my brother-in-law and my nephew, my 11-year-old nephew. My brother-in-law and my nephew are Commanders fans. And we were at the watering hole around the corner from our house, and we were having a blast, and we're watching the game. My buddy Tony is there. He's a Bears fan, and we're watching the game, and we're having a blast, and the roller coaster of emotions is happening. And I watched the reaction that every Commanders fan had right there in front of me with two people I care deeply about, my brother-in-law and my 11-year-old nephew. And all I could think to myself after, as it was happening and after it happened, is this is how football gets you. This now you have this memory. My 11-year-old nephew, much like a 10-year-old me, had a memory of the 85 Bears. He will now have a memory of Jaden Daniels throwing a Hail Mary, an improbable play, to get a win over the Chicago Bears. And now he's a fan. At minimum, he's got that memory for life, and he's probably going to be a fan of that team no matter what for the rest of his life. And I'm happy for them because all he knows in the 11 years that he's been on this earth is misery for that franchise and that organization. So I can't even really be that mad. They deserve to win that game. But man, yeah, the handoff to the backup center, the prevent defense at the end, you had all three of your timeouts remaining in the second half. Giving Jaden Daniels 24 seconds was a choice. Horrible. Horrible. Somebody should lose their job. Nobody's going to lose their job.
No, you can't cut the corner either because he's actually pretty good, the one that was goofing off. And
oh, Tyreek Stevenson's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
A whole nother thing. Like, that's a whole... Everybody was sending me that. Like, I hadn't seen it. And I saw it. And I'm like, yeah, he's a knucklehead. He's a complete knucklehead. There's no reason to do what he was doing except that you're not composed, you're not focused, and you're way over your skis. And the thing is, like, he's normally a pretty good player. He's a pretty good player. Second round draft pick. Somebody you're going to have as part of your future. And you were, they were down a couple of players on defense. I'm not making excuses. Tyreek Stevenson needs to be better than what he was. And you know, I have a feeling that not the coaches or not the organization, but the captains on that team, DJ Moore and the captains of that team, are going to pull him aside and get him right. He's already apologized for his actions. It doesn't matter. You can't. You have to be better than that. And to see the ball tip off his hands into the hands of Noah Brown, it's like, well, and now to see the video after that, like, that's instant karma. It is instant karma on display on that football field. But can we talk about the Bills? Let's talk about something more uplifting, because I've been in a pretty good mood, and it was another epic weekend. We had a lot to get to.
You know what? I'll just kind of finish this up. If this were a playoff game, then welcome to 13 seconds.
Yeah.
You're at the beginning of this, hey, are we going to get good sort of journey? And when the Bills lost on a Hail Mary in Arizona, that was 2020, and they had yet to even win a playoff game with Josh Allen at quarterback at that point. And that was kind of a turning point, I thought.
It hurt.
That season. It hurt. And I remember Deion Dawkins, you know, putting it out there on X or the Players Tribune, talking about, you know, the Arizona acting like they had won the Super Bowl. No, we're the team of destiny. And yeah, it's a regular season game. That's what it was for Chicago in a year that pretty much not anybody's expecting anything great out of them, but I was concerned for you. But yeah, let's talk about those Bills.
Please, if we may. Ryan Talbot from New York Upstate is going to stop by later on this afternoon, right around 4:25. He will be here to talk about the Bills and to recap yesterday's win against the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, and we'll be talking to Nate Geary, Buffalo Bills Radio Network, coming up at the bottom of the hour, where, gosh, when you win a game like that, Nate takes calls and he takes your complaints and he will let you vent. And what venting was there yesterday? That game was pretty apparent. This was going to go Buffalo's way. If you didn't realize there when the ball was snapped over Geno's head, or when Geno tripped on fourth down, or when you saw two players fighting,
or how about this? How about Josh Allen loses a fumble, but they don't lose a fumble? Like, inexplicable. The ball is wet, slips out of his hands, but it doesn't cost the Bills. Like, everything kind of went their way yesterday.
Yeah. Like, there were opportunities for Seattle to match Buffalo point for point, and they failed to capitalize. So we'll talk about that with Nate and with Ryan. And we got time for your calls at 866-4326-8664-FAN. The table is set.
Yeah, and we appreciate you checking out the YouTube channel as well, at The Fan Rochester. We're streaming live now, also on Twitch, at The Fan Rochester, and you know we sound our best in the free-to-download Odyssey app. Feel free to engage with us on any of our platforms, including X, at The Fan Rochester.
Yeah, I thought one thing I miscalculated here, I thought really Seattle would come out and they'd be running the ball all over Buffalo. So maybe credit Baylen Spector and credit those guys defensively, that it just wasn't the case yesterday from the get-go. And for Buffalo, what do we think of Keon Coleman here?
I mean, I think it's a shame that Kansas City let him slip through their fingers and that he landed with the Buffalo Bills. Just really kind of a disappointing outcome for a team that has really struggled here over the last few seasons. So, I mean, I feel for the Chiefs, honestly, more than anything.
Yeah. 866-4326, waiting patiently, is Tim in San Diego listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Danger, I don't mean to rub it in. I was at my friend's house yesterday, and they are DC sports faithful. And so it's about 25 people there. I get my own little TV. I call it the Buffalo Wing. And, you know, nice setup in the back area of their house. And to see that play happen, I mean, it was just bedlam with 25 people.
Oh, yeah.
jumping out of their seats. It was crazy.
Hey, let me tell you something, Tim. I was at, as I said, I was at a watering hole, and most of the people were there to watch the Bills, and they stuck around after the Bills game. There, you know, still was plenty of time left in the Bears and Commanders, and everybody that was still there watching that game, they didn't have a rooting interest. They went bananas. You go bananas because it's an unbelievable play. The improbable happens. And I can't even be mad at it. I have lots of reasons to be mad, but I'm not mad at that play other than the execution was completely terrible. And as a Bills fan, you know what it feels like. And most fans know what that feels like because you've had it happen to your team at one point or another. It sucks. Exactly. It's the absolute worst, but it's amazing at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. And there was one Bears fan amongst the D.C. faithful, and believe me, his reaction was not obviously the exact opposite. He's like, you know, spitting out expletives and so on. But talking about the Bills, there isn't really much to talk about. I mean, they dominated in all three phases for the most part. And one thing I will say, the critiquing, that officiating crew needs a timeout.
Terrible.
They are just horrible, horrible. And I believe that was the same crew for the Jets Monday night game, if I'm not mistaken. So they need to really just, I mean, they just killed the momentum of that game at times. And that's my only, you know, real complaint about the game yesterday, because, you know, the defense showed up, Gene, like you said. The offense really got the running game going. And yeah, Keon Coleman is really establishing himself as a primary option now in the offense. So it's really, really good to see. And now, you know, on to Miami. Of course, you know, Miami obviously facing their own issues. But, you know, the division game is a division game. You don't know what to expect. Obviously, you look at the Browns and Ravens yesterday. So, they'll get the W this week, I'm sure. But you never know. So,
yeah,
that's my take.
Yeah, Tim, thank you for starting us off here. Anybody wants to follow up, Tim, our phone number 585-866-4FAN, 866-4326. And it is one of those Mondays, Danger, where if you're somebody that likes to vent and complain and point out things, I mean, what are you pointing out for yesterday?
I mean, yeah. Tim pointed out the officiating. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. 24 assessed penalties.
The most in the league this year for any game.
I think that there were a total of 32 flags thrown total. 32 flags. Now, you had 13 against the Bills, 85 yards. You're not helping yourselves. You get the win. You can complain about the Bills getting 13 penalties in a game. That's not great. But this officiating crew is atrocious. It becomes an unwatchable product. It's really, really tough. And yeah, I think that they probably need to be sat down by the league and said, hey, you guys want to, you know, lighten up a little bit? You trying to get the TV time? What are we doing here? It's a horrible flow to the game.
Yeah, but then again, I'm thinking back to some of the plays. Yeah, there was PI on Hamlin late. That was a hold on Gilliam. For Seattle, that was certainly a hit on Josh Allen. I mean, there was no doubt about it.
Wasn't that scary for a second there? I mean, it looked as if when Josh got hit that his eyes rolled back into the back of his
head. It was helmet to helmet.
I know. Yeah. And all I could think was, oh, God, get up. Oh, God, I hope he's okay. I hope he's not concussed. Because it looked violent. And then, of course, that was the hit that led to the infighting. And, you know, to Tom Brady's credit, and I agree with him on this, and I'm going to give him a little credit as a color guy. I mean, it sounded like, I agree with his evaluation of Seattle. Like, this was a team that just looked uncomfortable in their skin, like they're growing into their own skin. This is a new head coach, a first-time head coach, and there are probably guys there that aren't entirely bought in, or guys there that are adjusting to a new culture, a new head coach, and everything that goes with it. And you would have thought that they purged most of that when you know, they moved on from Ross. But I imagine it's probably tough. And if Mike McDonald is trying to do what, like, Sean McDermott did as an example, there are probably guys on that roster that he would like to move on from, but he can't necessarily move on from. McDermott moved on from a lot of guys and used it as capital to build for the future. And maybe that's what we see Seattle do here in Mike McDonald's second season.
Yeah, I mean, not having Metcalf certainly hurt yesterday, but to win last week in Atlanta and then follow it up with that performance, okay, so Jacksonville was like in that category too, and I guess Miami the first time around. We've seen the Bills win a few of these where I want to give all the credit to Buffalo, and then also say, hey, what was the opponent doing there? Like, they were not ready to go. So you could say, sure, they're at a team in transition, but I just look, when you have players fighting like the way those two knuckleheads were. You knew Buffalo wasn't losing yesterday once that happened. When you can't get your own act together.
Yeah, and I think you have to give it up for both coordinators, both Joe Brady and Bobby Babich. They had great game plans designed, and you had balance offensively. By the end of the game, you had 34 rushing and 34 passing plays for the Bills offense. And what can you say about the way the Bills defense attacked? I mean, they set a tone on the first play, the Rousseau tip. You're like, oh boy, it's going to be one of those games. And Rousseau was fantastic. The defense was great. And not having Terrell Bernard turned out to not be a liability for this defense.
Yeah, and the offense starting off with a nine-minute drive, a little over 9 minutes, Danger.
Nine times.
That, to me, is the way you win playoff games. When you're moving down the field, you don't give the opponent the ball. It's a little bit of maturity for Josh Allen that, sure, maybe the big play could be there, but why take that? Take what's underneath. And speaking of underneath, it's a ridiculous stat line, Danger. 38 times he's been targeted, 36 catches for Khalil Shakir. You throw it to Khalil Shakir on first and 10, it's almost like, you know, at minimum it's going to be second and 3. Yeah. So just a nickel and dime your way down the field. Yeah, yeah, Brady in the booth. That's kind of how the Patriots would kill you there. 1,000 paper cuts.
Right. Yeah, 10 targets for Shakir.
Nine times.
Nine catches, 107 yards, and he has the highest catch rate of any wide receiver in the NFL this season. If it's going his way, it's not coming out. He's catching it more times than not, obviously. And it was a big day for James Cook, too. That I don't like that my mind goes this way, but after the game and I saw James Cook's stat line, my first thought was, the Bills are going to have to pay James Cook. Maybe not right away, but at some point here, this upcoming offseason, when they enter his fourth year, his contract year, right? They're going to have to decide, are we paying James Cook?
No, they don't have to do that at all.
They don't have to.
No, I mean, you could next year just let, I mean, he's going to be a great bargain. Next year, his base salary is 1.5. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what you get. So, where you're going there, I'm just wondering, like, at what point in this culture do we have a player like that that says, hey, you know what? Time for me. Like, if he leads the Bills to great things, like, you don't have to pay James Cook, but does James Cook's representation say, hey, you know what? Sit out at camp or whatever it is. We don't get that here.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. I guess that's where I'm going.
That's where you're going.
Yeah, like I'm saying that we might have a player here for the first time in the Sean McDermott era that raises his hand and says, I get it. You know, I'm under contract and it's $1.5 million, but look what I did. Look at how many touchdowns I was scoring for you in 2024. Look at all the yardage I put. They're going to have to pay him. Maybe they don't have to, and maybe they manage their way through it and see what year four of his pro career looks like before they address it, or they just let him walk in free agency and know, hey, we got Ray Davis, you know, ready to go. He'll be another guy next in line, and they just keep churning through running backs and decide to never invest in that position because they don't see the value in doing so. But he has been fantastic this season. Another 111 yards rushing on 17 carries. I mean, 6.5 yards a clip. Three catches, 22 yards. Big game for James Cook. And yeah, that was the first thing I thought to myself. Was like, they might be forced to have to pay a running back if they want to keep him around, because he's going to command a hefty payday at some point here.
Or he just plays 2025 out and he's gone in 2 years. And like you said, you're drafting another mid-round running back there, because I'm curious. Like, I don't think Ray Davis is that leading man, so to speak, but it is something the Bills really haven't had. I don't even know where they really had it with Frank Gore, but a player like that, you've been hoping, like a Zach Moss or somebody
I guess that's what I'm thinking is, like, Cook feels different than Devin Singletary and feels different than Frank Gore. It feels different than what they've had back there, because he feels like a star. He feels like a star player. He feels like a star running back in this league. And you have to pay stars. And I don't know. It would be out of character for them to do it. But that was my takeaway. Mm-hmm. It's like, at some point, if they want to keep James Cook a Buffalo Bill, they're going to have to pay him. And I wonder what that looks like here at the end of this season into next. I don't like that my mind went there, Gino, but my mind went there. I couldn't help myself.
This is what you do on a Victory Monday. A Victory Monday, Mike Danger.
Oh, it's
Monday. I'm cueing you here. This is what we do in the sports bar. Some like put on hats, some light up cigars. What do you do in Rochester when you're feeling good?
You just fire up some Italian tunage, maybe a little Bruno Martino in the background, light a Victory cigar, pour a bottle of brown.
Cos'hai trovato in lui di tanto bello?
Just class it up a little bit, folks.
I can smell the cigarettes and the aqua velva and
there's some sauce simmering in the background as well. Oh, this is Victory. This is what Victory sounds like in the sports bar.
Unfortunately, we do not have Bruno with us anymore. But
shocking, really? All class. That's what we're about here in the sports bar. All class. A little Bruno Martino. On Victory Money. You didn't call the carousel on Sunday morning, did you?
I did not.
How was the weekend of Gene?
The weekend of Gene came to an end because I had to pick up the executive producer at 2 o'clock at our fine airport, which still looks really nice here.
The airport, yeah, a little construction, a little bit of dust, but it's coming together.
The weekend of Gene, I enjoyed watching baseball, Danger. We haven't even gotten to baseball.
Man, we haven't.
Wow.
We have a couple minutes here before we get to Nate. I got home Friday night after Aquinas Hilton, Friday Night Rivals, and, you know, after the girls were done, you know, getting me caught up on everything that happened to them, like, hey, can we, it's extra innings, can we maybe turn on game one of the World Series? And, of course, turned it on right in time to see Freddie Freeman rip everybody's hearts out like an assassin.
Yeah, I mean, the easy second guess, and this is the one, like, what are you doing? A player that hasn't pitched in over a month, and you're going to put him in that situation, Nestor Cortes, that felt more emotional. Hill should have been the choice for the Yankees. Also, Freddie Freeman's really good. He's won batting titles. He led the Braves to a World Series championship. I know Betts is also good, but my gosh, you walk Betts to get the Freeman? Of course that was going to happen. Right field and everybody pointing out how that felt like Kirk Gibson
back in
1988, if you were around for that. So the good thing is, for Yankee fans, this is in the Bronx tonight.
Yep.
I hope it's like old Yankee Stadium where everybody's into it and it's loud tonight.
Yeah, and you know that the Dodgers are going to go bullpen game four.
Four.
Tonight you would think Buehler goes longer, right? Because you want to save those arms for tomorrow as best you can.
You're hoping Buehler, you can get six or seven out of him tonight.
Yeah, if you're the Dodgers.
Buehler's a guy that can hang a curveball, though. I think tonight is the night I do, and I'm not blowing smoke at the Yankees here. Clark Schmidt is good.
Yeah.
Buehler, he got lit up by the Padres, lived dangerously against the Mets. I think the Yankees will take one here tonight.
I agree. I'm on the Yankees tonight as well. All right, we'll talk more World Series. We've got so much to get to this afternoon in the sports bar. We'll get back to the Bills and the Seahawks with our buddy Nate Gary, the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. And hey, last week we were talking about how Josh Allen, Nate's got Josh Allen at the top of his list for MVP. And I think that conversation, given the results of yesterday, it's a week-to-week league after all. I think he's back in that conversation for sure around the league. Nate Gary joins us next from the Buffalo Bills Radio Network and WGR on the Fan Rochester.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan Rochester.
The Fan Rochester. Sports update.
Buffalo at 6-2 now on the season following the blowout win at Seattle. Sean McDermott on getting the W.
We knew we were going to have to play well in all three phases, and I think we did, at least at this point, enough to get the result that we were looking for. But there's definitely things, again, that we have to improve on, pre-snap penalties and the penalties overall, and then just some decision-making.
Von Miller returns this coming week from the four-game suspension. We'll talk to Nate Gary, Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Nate, scheduled to join us next year in the sports bar. Tonight, it's game three of the World Series in the Bronx. Yankees sending Clark Schmidt. Los Angeles going with Walker Buehler. LA up by a 2-0 margin. Monday Night Football has the Giants and Steelers. Also tonight, Buffalo Sabres hosting Florida. Our coverage will begin at 7 o'clock. Gene Battaglia, the sports leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.
Straight up with no chaser. You're in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the sports leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan, Rochester.
I thought our fan base showed up, man, big time. Not surprising, but never taking that for granted. The red, white, and blue of the Buffalo Bills showed up all the way out here in the Northwest and couldn't be more grateful.
But this was a pretty good performance, wouldn't you say?
By our fans, for sure. Yeah, by our fans. Yeah. Did you hear them out there? I've never heard this place like that in all my years in the NFL. Been out here a number of years. I've never heard that. And that's a testament to the Bills, testament to the Bills fans and the organization, really, for the tradition that they've built over the years.
Yeah. That's something we didn't talk about as we were opening up. It really felt like a Bills home game at points of yesterday's game.
Yeah, we got audio from Geno Smith saying, like, for Geno Smith and the Seahawks just to say, hey, our fans got it done. I thought, joining us here, Nate Geary, I mean, it's one thing. I mean, we know the Bills fan base travels well, Nate, but those are the 12s. That's supposedly a legendary fan base, and to get overtaken the way they did yesterday. Nate, appreciate your time. How are you, bud?
I'm well, guys. It's a October football game against an AFC opponent, 1 o'clock in the afternoon for them. Yeah, you know, I feel like that's probably an easy game to sell your tickets for, no?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean,
even if it's Josh Allen and the Bills,
Right. Well, and you know, what is it worth? It's worth what somebody will pay for it. And I have a feeling Bills Mafia has no problem spending that money on what they love to do, which is watch the Bills play on a Sunday. So a big win and man, can we start with what the offense had dialed up? Or it felt like Joe Brady dialed up the perfect offensive game plan, and it's something when you see it executed the way it was executed yesterday, Nate.
Yeah, I think 2 weeks in a row, their offense is kind of we've seen when this offense has been at its best over the last couple of years, kind of regardless of who's calling plays. And Josh Allen and the offense sort of runs through Josh Allen. The thing I think is that it's finally working for this offense is that Josh doesn't also have to be the primary running back, right? He doesn't have to be the primary facilitator in the run game. And now we're seeing what kind of a complete offense can look like, which is kind of what I think, you know, Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean wanted from this offense all along was, hey, you know, when the Bills are going to need Josh to run and make big plays on third and fourth down, come January, you know, he'll be ready to do that. But I think what they want to be able to do is also turn the ball around, you know, turn around and hand the football off, have, you know, play action on first down, which we saw way more of this week. Over the last couple of weeks, they've been trending away from being the team that I think has been maybe all too predictable on first down. They like to run the football a lot, especially out of shotgun, and they've been moving more to the under center stuff. Yesterday, I saw two toss sweeps, one out of shotgun, and then one from under center as well, where they're starting to attack the boundary and started to stretch defenses out horizontally, because this is a team that really likes to run dive and likes to run that pin and pull concept to run inside the guards and the tackles. And they haven't really shown a willingness to get the ball outside of the tackles. And you have a guy like James Cook, who I think has really good foot speed. We saw, you know, him beat Terrell Dotson to the edge on that first touchdown that he had. And I think it was a really good example of him doing a great job bouncing that play. But I'd like to see the Bills and Joe Brady start to attack the edge a little bit more with their running game. But, you know, I think all in all, we saw a couple designed runs from Allen, one on third down that, you know, I think it was like their defensive end went really wide, and it ended up opening up a great running lane for Allen to get the first down. But, like, all in all, I just think this is kind of the culmination of a couple of years of trying to find the most efficient way to transition away from Josh as the, you know, sort of every down running back in this team and the guy that can throw the football. And I think they're finding that sweet spot where they can be most efficient offensively.
Yeah, Nate, I'm not particularly a big fan of the fade pattern. However, I think it's noteworthy what that chemistry that Allen is developing here with Keon Coleman. The first time it didn't work. Second time, I don't know if it's exactly a fade, but hey, there's one-on-one. I'm going to let my guy win his battle, which Coleman did. And where are we at in terms of the development of Keon Coleman after another impressive performance, would you say?
he kind of looks like a stud. He's kind of now earned some of these yards after catch throws. The ones that had really kind of the idea behind this offense were those were going to go to Curtis Samuel. Obviously, Samuel injured, didn't play this week with the shoulder. And I think it opened up some opportunities on some of those quick hitting plays. And he's made the most of it. Frankly, between him and Shakir, they've really been the ones that have facilitated that short screen game to the wide receiver. And I think they bring two different sort of looks for a defense where, you know, Shakir is, you get the ball to him quickly and he's a hard guy to bring down. And then you get to Coleman and it just feels like he strides guys. Like he gets the ball in his hand. He's physical. He's north, south. He's kind of like the perfect, the thunder and lightning, kind of how you're looking like it. You have the running back position with James Cook, who's a little bit, a little bit more quicker and more of a finesse back. But having said that, I mean, his second touchdown was one of the most physical runs I've seen from James Cook in his time with the Bills. But I think they've got those two, Coleman and Shakir, have a really unique yard after a catch ability and provide two different sort of looks in that wide receiver screen game. And it worked really well the last 2 weeks. And listen, we could talk about, Keon Coleman all day. But I think Khalil Shakir is right now, this team's number one receiver. And Amari Cooper, although he only had one catch for 3 yards or whatever it was, it is very clear to me he's made a significant impact on how defenses are trying to defend the Bills. And it's really opened up things for Coleman to take the next step and Shakir. And when it's all said and done, guys, and Curtis Samuel can get back in this lineup, I think they have a very formidable, group of four receivers. And Samuel being their number four instead of their number two or number three, I think speaks to a position that started with a lot of question marks, but is rounding in shape. And I think slotted a little better than it was, going into the end of the season.
Yeah, Nate, I mean, I'm just kind of shocked that Kansas City let Keon Coleman go by them and let him fall to the Buffalo Bills. It's kind of shocking for an organization that's had as much success as they've had. I don't like that my mind goes this way sometimes, Nate, but it's a victory Monday, and after the Bills win, and there's not a ton to complain about, I want to talk about James Cook for a second because he had another great game. And James Cook is a star running back in this league. Will the Bills do what star running backs want and acquiesce and actually pay a running back? We haven't really seen McDermott and Bean do that. Project out what you think James Cook's shelf life is with the Buffalo Bills here, Nate.
Well, I think what's unique about him, knock on wood, is he's been pretty healthy really over the course of his career. Obviously missed a game earlier this season with that toe injury, but largely he's been available, and that's always the issue with running backs in the NFL is availability. And I think if one year were to maybe shift the narrative a little bit on the running back and the free agent market, it might be this year with all the success that I think the Eagles are now having with Saquon Barkley paying him and kind of seeing what he's been able to do, getting his first real second contract, not being tagged. I think is helping the situation. DeAndre Swift has had up and downs this year, but largely has been very good for the Chicago Bears, who they went out and paid him in this offseason as well. So, listen, I think if the number's right that they'll 100% consider it, but I think what they might continue to do is just draft guys between the second and fourth rounds, and they're seeing it across the NFL. I mean, this kid yesterday for the 49ers last night is, Jordan Mason at, 2 weeks ago led the NFL in rushing yards, gets hurt, and the third stringer comes in and looks even better than Mason does.
Yeah.
So I think with that, you have to kind of realize that when you're paying a quarterback like you will be with Josh Allen, and I expect him to probably rework or extend that contract this offseason and give him a little bit more money, give them some more flexibility on the salary cap. I think that move is for sure coming. You may not have the luxury of being able to pay a running back a second contract if you're also paying. I think Christian Benford might be a top three, top four number in the cornerback market. I think Rousseau will probably be a top 10 number at edge. And then Bernard's probably going to be a top two or top three number at linebacker. All of a sudden, you go from having a team where you're wondering, does this roster have blue chip players? I think we talked about this in the offseason, guys. It was like, you look at Kansas City, and consistently they've got three or four Hall of Fame players on their team, plus a Hall of Fame coach. That gives them kind of an advantage when you're fitting the rest of the roster around those guys. And the Bills transitioned away from not Hall of Famers, but really damn good players, and they replaced them or have been in the process of replacing them with really good young players. And I think between Bernard, Rousseau, and Benford, you know, you've got three guys right now that could really press to be making a lot of money over the next couple of years. But we'll see. We'll see what the number looks like and how the rest of the market shakes out next year. But it would maybe be surprising if he you know, ends up seeing the second contract. But I guess I would say never say never.
Nate Geary, Buffalo Bills Radio Network, our guest here. Nate, there is going to be a roster move coming up here tomorrow. Hey, Von Miller is back. I don't think the Bills particularly miss Von Miller in these four games. Is he's just a backup at this point, correct? I mean, what you're seeing out of Rousseau and Epineza, like, I would only put in Miller if they you know, needed a little bit of a breather here.
Well, I think that he's going to probably go back to doing what he was doing before he was suspended, and he was doing it at the most efficient level he's had in probably the last three or four seasons. So I think what it does is, you know, for me, I'm thinking about what's the next move. Obviously, Josh Uche today gets moved, thanks a pant load, New England, for trading them, I think, a good player. And they're also going to get healthier on the defensive line. That really solidifies them. An already really good defense, if not the league's best, right up there. Getting a little bit better. And I'm thinking to myself, what move can the Bills make? They obviously make the move for Cooper. What's the next one? And I think for me, one of them is you're getting Von Miller back. Just like it did with the wide receiver room, I think it slots everybody down. Dwayne Smoot has played very good football. Casey Tuhill made a great play yesterday. Yeah. He looked good when given the opportunity. You know, Javon Solomon has also looked good when given an opportunity to play and getting there. He had another sack yesterday. So, I think it's a very good problem to have. I think getting him for the 15 or 20 or so plays that he can give you, especially on third down as a pass rushing specialist, it only helps you and provides the additional depth on the outside there on the edge. And to me, I think the question about, you know, where Brandon Bean could look to add wouldn't surprise me at all if they look to maybe, especially not maybe knowing what they're going to get when Wayne Carter returns, if he's going to be able to return from that wrist surgery he had last week. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they go out and maybe try to make a move for a veteran defensive tackle, because there are several out there with very palatable cap figures that they could go get to really kind of maybe solidify the middle, with the idea that, you know, maybe that's the one area they'd like to get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger at.
Nate, when we had you on last week, you didn't hesitate when we asked why Josh Allen should be at the top of the list for MVP consideration, even though Lamar Jackson had a near-perfect game and a 5-touchdown performance on a Monday Night Football game against Tampa Bay. It's a week-to-week league, and I think those chants are only going to grow louder and louder and louder. Talk about what a little bit more on what we talked about last week with Josh Allen potentially having his first MVP season.
Yeah, and you want to talk about one of the things that you know makes good quarterbacks great, right, or great quarterbacks great, is they elevate the play of people around him. And you're seeing what he's been able to do. And listen, a lot of credit is absolutely deserving of Keon Coleman for developing the way that he has, and Shakir developing the way that he is, and Kincaid developing the way that he is. But now you're starting to see guys like Dawson Knox finally find their role, right? So, but part of that is when you've got a great quarterback, they find ways to get the best out of the guys that are they're kind of in his group around him. And they did a great job of kind of realizing they needed a little bit more to help them unlock. And they're getting that. But I think for me, it's hard, because if you look at Josh Allen, and I think in large part Lamar Jackson too, is both have sort of, you know, really rounding their game into the players that they're going to be for the rest of their careers, which is going to have to be quarterbacks. They're not going to, neither of those guys are going to be able to rely on their legs like they do right now, or they have historically over the next 3, 4, 5 seasons. And you're starting to see them develop into the passers that are the guys that win Super Bowls, right? And from the pocket and winning from the pocket, you hear, as old school as you want to say it is, when you hear the Tony Dungy's, when you hear you know, the Cowers and these older head coaches talk about, and even Tom Brady to an extent now that he's got a camera on him at all times, talk a lot about, you know, the best quarterbacks, they win from the pocket, and they add that other stuff as sort of features to a really strong game from the pocket. And I think that's where Josh right now is probably playing better than anyone in the league. And that should only, his resume should only get better, especially I'm looking at that four-game stretch of, you know, Kansas City, Detroit, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. If they could win two or three of those games, and Josh is a big reason why, you know, he's going to really put himself in, I think, in a great position to get his first one. And it'll make everybody feel better, right? I guess we'll all feel pretty fine, I guess we'll.
Yeah. Nate, I don't think it's too soon to start thinking about playoff seeding. We kind of touched on this, and some guests we've had, I'm like, no. And like, you are up four games in the win column. Like, it is going to be November, and you're up four games, and if you go up five on Miami here, what is the ceiling here? Are we just kind of thinking that Kansas City at undefeated, they're too far gone? Or would you think the two seed would be possible for this Bills team?
I do. I also think that there's going to come a time here. You're going to get Kansas City straight up, right? So you're going to have an opportunity, but like, there's just no way that Kansas City is going to be able to plop along for the next, you know, 10 weeks or whatever it is, playing the same way and keep winning these one-score games. They're going to get caught up, and eventually when that happens, the Bills will have an opportunity to make them down. They still got to play the Chargers, who I think are maybe more capable of beating them than they have been. So we'll see. You know, I still think it could be in reach, but the Bills have to go on a pretty muddy run. I think they're going to have to win 13 games if they want to have really any say in that one seed. But I think the two seed is absolutely up for grabs, because I think the Ravens still have to play the Bengals, and those are always really, really competitive games. So are they're divisional games. That the North Division, they just beat up on each other.
That's right.
So I suspect that the Bills will absolutely have a chance. Especially if by the time the Bills play the Jets again, they've completely laid down, which could absolutely be the case. I mean, there's a really good chance Aaron Rodgers is going to get, you know, shut down for some sort of phantom hamstring injury and go back to his cave and wherever he goes to rip his ayahuasca. So
enter the darkness once again. Nate, yeah. What about Miami? I didn't have a chance to watch a lot of Dolphins Cardinals from yesterday, the return of Tua. But I also didn't see any eye-popping stats from the big playmakers, the speed of that offense. So what Dolphins team do you think the Bills get come Sunday?
The one that they really should handle. I think that they're the team. They're probably a worse version of the team that, you know, the Bills absolutely walked a couple of weeks ago. But I think it's also, and I think this way, is I've always thought, even like going into week two or whenever it was they played them earlier this year and then last year, there's still this sort of level of nervousness that you have when you go into a divisional game. Even with the Bills, you know, really dominating the division over the last couple of seasons, it just feels like Miami's eventually going to, you know, get the monkey off their back. And this one, maybe, I think Bills fans in large part probably feel the same way I do, which is like, I'm feeling really confident going into this week, how the Bills have performed the last 2 weeks against bad teams. I don't know what to think of Seattle, but, you know, obviously the Titans, and Titans specifically, are a pretty bad football team. The Bills show up in the first half like they did against the Titans. They could absolutely be a close game, you know, next week against the Dolphins. But I'm expecting the Bills to take care of business and blow that team out and really probably end their season. And listen, the Bills put seven losses on the column for the Dolphins. It would not surprise me at all to see them start to consider cleaning house in Miami. And how funny would that be, 5 months after McDaniel gets his extension, for them to fire him? And I don't know, what are they going to do? Who's going to go? Who is more equipped from a play-calling perspective than McDaniel to run that offense? I don't know. And specifically Tua. So, I would really like the Bills to, over the next couple of weeks, put an end to Rodgers and put an end to this Dolphins team. And I think everyone will feel a lot better about the rest of the season once that's over with.
Nate, we'll be listening coming up on Sunday. Gotta love those 1 o'clock kickoffs from home there, Nate.
I love the 1 o'clock kickoff. Can't wait. It's, hopefully it'll be some beautiful weather, low, I think 50s or like low 60s maybe this weekend. So hopefully another great weather day, and it'll be November, right? It'll be November.
Yeah.
Holy cow, it'll be November.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right, first November game. That was a tough realization in real time. But yeah, it's November, guys.
Nate, appreciate the time, man. Enjoy your week.
Always, fellas. Thanks.
There he is, Nate Gary. Hear him on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network on our Odyssey Sports sister station, WGR, talking some Bills. Talking some Dolphins, talking some Bills and Seahawks as well, getting his recap from yesterday. And yeah, when you're looking ahead to Sunday, I have a hard time not seeing it be a blow. I mean, the way the Bills have always handled the Dolphins, and I know you're going to say, oh, be careful, be careful. When did this happen? When did you and I reverse roles this season for the Bills?
I whiffed thinking that Seattle would have competent coaching and, you know, kind of go to the, you know.
Can you pull up Noah Fant's stat line? Because we were worried about Noah Fant as a playmaker for Seattle.
You say we. Like you were not.
We.
We. No,
we
I
are
was
the sports
one.
Bar collectively.
No, I brought up Noah Fant to Andy Barron's Friday, and you were like, please, Noah Fant shouldn't scare
Noah,
you.
Noah Fant sucks. He sucks. He's a zero. I think he had one catch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a fan. I mean, if there was anything that was shocking to me, it was the ineffectiveness of Kenneth Walker. Like, they didn't. He was a zero for them.
They didn't use him.
Ridiculous.
They really didn't. That's the part. Update from Houston, Danger. Keeping an eye on Stephon Diggs. Is that a season-ending knee injury? Head coach D'Amico Ryan speaking last hour, quote, for Diggs, we're still evaluating. We'll see where it's at.
We're going to take a break and come back with more before we talk more Buffalo Bills with Ryan Talbot, NewYorkUpstate.com. We were talking with Nate about Josh Allen and maybe his name being thrown in the MVP conversation a little bit more loudly here. I'm going to make a case for a coach to be coach of the year based on what his team has done through some adversities here. And we were just talking about Mike McDaniel and the lack of success through adversity that the Dolphins have had this season. This guy would be the polar opposite of what they've seen down in Miami. And also, a little bit of chatter here, Gino, because you brought it up. What if the playoffs started today? Let's look at the seeding. Let's look at where the Bills would land and how this would all shake out for Buffalo.
I like that. On a football Monday, something happened down in Houston with that Colts-Texans game that I don't think I've ever seen in the NFL, and it's very telling, and it's something that when you're looking ahead for the Buffalo Bills, maybe not is a bad thing at all. And out in Denver, we weren't paying any attention to that game whatsoever, right? Yeah, okay, let's see, the Commanders and Bears, but oh yeah, the Broncos and Panthers. Are you kidding me? We had this little jawing after the game.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I've got some thoughts here, and I'm going to do what I never thought I would do, defend Sean Payton.
All right, we'll get to that and more next. Ryan Talbot, New York Upstate, going to talk Bills, Seahawks, and look ahead to Bills, Dolphins as well. That's coming up in the 4 o'clock hour here in the Sports Bar. You're welcome to join us at 866-4FAN, 585-866-4326.
You're listening to the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.